Okay, so no, first and foremost, Diego, thank you so much for coming on board to share with us. I really believe that this conversation and your works will continue to touch many lives in Asia. And also really excited for your upcoming book, Way Forward, which we will chat about more later. For those of us who are not as familiar yet about your personal journey, can you share with us, the story behind your pen name, Young Pueblo, and how it reflects your journey and philosophy?
I came up with the name Young Pueblo, and at first it was just a name that kind of appeared in my mind. But when I started meditating in 2012, I started realizing that I was really immature as an individual, right? I had a lot of growing to do. I had to, come out of selfishness, come out of ill-fated patterns that were always bringing me back into sorrow and to misery. When I was reflecting on myself, I'd always loved studying history, and I realized that humanity as a whole is also very immature, right? We still have a lot of growing up to do. And I like using the example of, what did we learn when we first started going to school? We learned a lot of the basic things, how to clean up after ourselves, how to share, not hitting each other, treating each other with kindness, these really like really basic things. And when you look at humanity as a whole, we haven't mastered these things. We're still trying to apply them on a societal level. When I write a lot about the individual and about relationships, but it's always with the understanding that humanity as a whole is young. So young Pueblo literally means young people. We're in this point of big growth for humanity.
What are some of the experiences that you've gone through that led you to delve deeper into this space, especially in the area of, self-awareness and personal growth?
I think the real sort of big pivot moment came when, basically I almost lost my life. I was doing a lot of drugs. I was partying all the time, consuming a lot of alcohol, and I was really pushing my body to the edge. And there came a moment where I basically had like a mild heart attack, and my heart felt like, I felt like I was, my life was almost slipping out of my hands.
And how old
And
were you?
I was 23 years old at the time.
Wow.
And in that moment, I realized how far I had pushed myself. And it also kind of clicked that the reason that got me there was because I had been lying to myself. Like, I didn't want to accept the fact that I didn't feel good. I didn't want to accept that there was actually something wrong, that I had all this sadness and anxiety that was pushing me into these habits of, constantly partying, constantly, trying to get away with myself by surrounding myself with a lot of people, and so that I wouldn't ever have to be alone with myself or feel my emotions. When, that led me to that final breaking point, I realized that the only way for me to come out of that was to start telling myself the truth. And that was the summer of 2011, and that's really where it all began.
And I think so many of us can relate to that, in one way or another, right? It's like distracting ourselves from the pain, numbing ourselves from the pain. And do you think like we all need to go through an extreme example like that or an extreme experience like that in order to be woken up to the truth or to explore the truth?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I think that's just what happened to me in my story. People have such different stories. I think a lot of times people just kind of realize that something might have happened in their past, whether it was in their childhood, or that they're missing certain qualities that could make their life better. So like, I like using the example of my wife. Like, my story is a little bit dramatic. My wife's story, like, she's as a serious meditator as I am, loves personal growth, and but she didn't have a dramatic beginning. Right. She was just inclined to it and was like, realized like, oh, like I have things that I can develop. So I think it really depends on the person.
Amazing. And so what happened for you when you reached, so-called rock bottom of your journey? What were the active steps that you took, to slowly evolve and get out of that hole?
After that moment happened, I realized that my body was incredibly unhealthy. I was like, I don't feel healthy. My body feels weak. What I started doing was I started going on very long walks. I started consuming more nutritious food. I remember I started taking barley grass, and I also, like really simple little things. But then the main emotional thing that I started doing was that I challenged myself to spend time with these emotions that I was running away from. So this was before I started meditating. I just knew that, okay, when I would feel a tough emotion, I would run away from it. So let me just feel it. Let me spend time feeling it. And I remember sitting in my room, sitting on my bed, and just like feeling the anxiety or feeling the sadness or whatever would randomly come up. And I realized, like, after, a few times of doing that, like, those feelings are uncomfortable, but I'm also okay. Like, I'm all right. They're not as scary as I originally thought they were. And it was pretty empowering.
That is really amazing. And I would love to hear from your point of view. Let's dive deeper, because I think for so many of us, we have heard, we need to sit with our emotions. We need to just be with our emotions and recognize it. I think it takes a lot of self-awareness. It takes a lot of practice. So could you walk us through, for example, for those of us who might be newer to this sitting with our emotions, could you walk us through what it's like? So let's say, for example, you're feeling down and out. So what's the process like?
I think it's pretty individualized, but I think whether you're in therapy or whether you're, meditating, there's a quality of acceptance, right? You're whatever is arising there, you're not fighting it, you're not trying to contort it, you're not giving it a narrative, you're just feeling it as it is. And I think even before, because like I learned how to meditate a year after that, a year after I started, just it felt very intuitive to just like sit with, because I hadn't read any self-help books. Like the wellness world was not that big back then in
No.
2011,
Yeah.
right? Like social media was still sort of developing and evolving. It was like, Instagram isn't what it is now. I just knew that there was a connection there. Like if I was going to be a happier, freer person, I had to face these like difficult, tense things inside of me. And I think that's just like a pretty case by case scenario, because sometimes for some people, they might have so much trauma, so much sort of heavy things accumulated inside them that they can start that process with a therapist. So it really depends. You can't really give an exact like step one, step two, step three.
And for you, you think that also was something that really helped you through your personal growth, and mindfulness journey?
Oh, yeah, I think it was funny because I think well, I meditate and I go away to these silent 10-day meditation courses, 10 days, 20 days, 30 days, 45 days, and I've built up over time. But that year of my life before I started meditating, it felt like good practice, to be able to sit with whatever was uncomfortable inside of me. And it wasn't like, I would sit with it for like 5, 10, 15 minutes, and even though it's a small amount of time, it felt like it made a world of a difference. And I started seeing the changes that I was making in my relationships. And I think that's when I was like, oh, I have to keep going. I have to keep trying.
And I know, through your interviews and through your works also, that meditation is a huge part of your
Huge.
life and your
Yeah.
journey. Could you tell us a little bit more about how you started, and was it natural from the beginning for you, and how you cultivated this habit along the way?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I had never meditated before. I mean, I meditated once for 20 minutes, and I didn't know how to meditate. I just sat on the floor, and it wasn't very productive. Like I had no technique. But a friend of mine had done this while he was traveling through India, and I was so struck by this email that he wrote to me and a few other friends, and he was writing about love and compassion and goodwill and how much this retreat had affected him. And I knew, I was like, oh, I need that too. I feel like I'm in this really transitional moment as well. I ended up doing a course, about I think like 6 months after him, and I did it in the United States, and they have these courses all over the world. And when I did it, the first one, it was incredibly difficult. I was used to being with myself, spending time like 5, 10, 15 minutes, like I was telling you earlier. But then this is like when you're silent like that, you're literally spending like 11 hours, a day by yourself, meditating, feeling everything that's inside. And I remember that first one was quite challenging. I spent most of that course thinking about how I wanted to escape. But I kept going back. After I left that course and I completed that first 10-day course, I realized that my mind was lighter. And I had never felt that before. I felt like my mind had a little more space in it in a really good way, where I could feel my old reactions and I could feel those old patterns, but I could decide whether I wanted to activate them or not, or I could decide if I wanted to, change the way I would behave to certain situations. And that's why I kept going back, because I was like, wow, even though that was incredibly difficult, the results were immediate. Yeah, honestly, it's the secret to my creativity as well, because I wasn't a writer before I started meditating.
You were not a writer before you started meditating. So something unlocked within you.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, it's funny, like, I don't think it's special to me, right? Because I see a lot of other people, whether they're doctors or lawyers or engineers or people in the tech field, when they start meditating, you know, in the same tradition, there's something happens when the mind isn't as heavy, right? When the mind doesn't have as much heavy conditioning, their capacity, their creativity for their work becomes so much bigger, and they see much better results in their work. And, you know, you don't go to meditate just to be a better worker. You go to be happier, to develop your freedom, you know, to take steps forward into wisdom. But one of the externalities of that development is that your creativity just goes through the roof.
Amazing. And so what led you to writing?
It was my intuition. After I did my third 10-day course, it was like, you know, Diego, like, you know that you've changed. You know that you're not perfect. You know that you're not fully wise. You know that you're not fully healed. You still have a long way to go, but something's happening here. Like, you can feel that healing is happening. And I was shocked. I was utterly shocked that healing was possible, because again, this is still pretty early on. This is like, you know, 2012, very early 2013. And we didn't understand healing the way we do now. Like, at that time, I still had that mindset that, you know, growing up in the United States, if you had some type of ailment, whether physical or mental, you just had to live with it for the rest of your life. There was no fixing it.
Yeah.
So to me, the idea that I could feel less sadness in my mind, that I could feel less anxiety, it was a shock. So that's when I was inspired to just start reflecting and sharing on the internet.
Amazing. Have you always known that you are fluent with your words, or words come naturally to you?
No, you know, no, I was never inclined. I was more so, like, especially in university, you know, and all the schooling that I've done, I've been much more inclined to, like, history, economics. Like, I got my degree in economics. Like, I thought I was going to be in finance. So to me, honestly, it was a surprise. I was like, I don't even know where all this poetry is coming from. Yeah.
What a great story. And so you started maybe in 2012 sharing your thoughts through words online, on social media.
Yeah, it was a little later. It was like 2014. So okay. I was, you know, started meditating, and then I felt that in my intuition that I should start writing. But it took me a little while to gather the courage to actually begin and start sharing. I'm really glad that when I started sharing and I started writing, I didn't wait to feel ready, right? I didn't go and, like, get a master's in fine arts or anything like that. I didn't put together a manuscript and then give it to a publisher. I instinctively knew, I was like, you know what, just share online. Share and see what happens.
Start small, right?
Yeah, exactly. Start small. And if people like it, institutions will come later. And that's exactly what happened was, you know, I started sharing, an audience slowly started developing. And then after that, the publishers came and all the other sort of, you know, the more institutionalized forms of acceptance. And I'm really glad I took that avenue, because I feel like if I had given my manuscript to a publisher, they would have never taken it.
I'm really so grateful that you stuck with it too, right? I mean, I can imagine there might be some times through the journey where you might have doubted yourself and it might have been discouraging.
Yeah.
So what happens when, you know, your mind is filled with doubts or imposter syndrome, or, like, you know, questioning, like, is this what I'm really meant to do? Should I just go back to what I'm comfortable with, which is in the finance world?
I mean, the doubt was there and it was heavy. What I was doing at the time, I think it scared the people around me too, because it was it was so risky, you know, like, and I think it took a while for, like, my friends and family members to be like, oh, wow, he's not wasting his time. Right. It's actually something good coming from this. And now everyone's really happy. But in the beginning, out of their love for me, right, they were like, oh, are you sure you want to do that? Or, you know, they're like, Diego, why haven't you? Because there was a time where I asked my wife if she can support. She was my girlfriend at the time. I was like, can you support the two of us for a while I take time to develop my voice as a writer? So I spent a while without a job. And that was a scary time. But I told her, I was like, hey, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to teach history at a high school. So I had, like, my backup plan, you know.
And you had a time frame? Do you attach a time?
I think she gave me about, like, 2 years. And it was a long time to not be making money and just, like, in New York City, totally, which is a very expensive place. But I'm really grateful to her, because without my wife's support, Young Pueblo would never have existed.
Amazing. You know, like, I love that your wife, your partner then also played such a huge role in your relationship and in your life, right? And you talk a lot also about relationships. I subscribe to your Substack, and I also love that, you know, you recently shared some lessons in your marriage over the last 8 years, right? What is maybe, if you could share with us listening today, what is one key lesson that you've learned in the area of relationships that have been transformational for you?
I think the biggest one is around communication. And that one was one that it took a long time for my wife and I to understand, was that the mind has this tendency where if it feels tension, if your mood is low, or if you don't particularly feel good that day, it wants to give it a reason. And oftentimes that reason will contort reality, right? It'll kind of change reality and try to place blame on someone else.
Yeah.
And my wife and I, we've realized that over time, because she's as serious of a meditator as I am, where we have caught ourselves trying to figure out how to blame each other for tension that is completely unrelated, you know, completely has nothing to do with each other. Because sometimes you wake up in the morning and you just don't feel good because you didn't get as many hours of sleep, or maybe your immune system's a little low, or you're just tired from work, you know. But then we had this one funny moment where, you know, I was working in the kitchen, my wife was working in the living room, and she comes in laughing, and she was like, and I was like, what's going on? And she was like, oh, I just spent the last 3 hours trying to figure out how to blame you for why I don't feel good.
Wow.
And she was like, I was just going back in time, trying to find anything that I can grab. And she was like, it was completely illogical. And, and I was laughing too, because I was like, I do that all the time as well. And obviously, certainly there are times where you make mistakes and you should apologize. That's obviously, you know, her and I, we're not perfect people. We make mistakes as well. But when we realize that mechanism of the mind, where it tries to just throw blame constantly onto other people, what we did was, okay, well, let's try to beat that system by telling each other multiple times a day how we feel. So when we wake up, it's like, oh, you know, I feel pretty good today. I feel great. So that I know and she knows. Or if she wakes up or I wake up and it's like, oh, I feel like tired and heavy. When you declare it out loud vocally, you know, and then they know as well. And then you can find ways to support each other. And even just simply by naming it, you know, there's less of that mental trickery.
You know, it really takes extreme self-awareness and really putting that ego and pride aside, right, to be able to do this. Is there a certain ritual or habit that both of you do as a couple to be able to, you know, also develop this much further?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, the main thing that we do by far is we both meditate every day. Oftentimes we do it at the same time, but we'll meditate for an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening. And you know, that's a lot of time. It's definitely a lot of time, but we have found that time that we give to ourselves, right, where we're meditating, we're sort of just, you know, observing and building self-awareness, it helps our relationship so much, and it helps all other facets of our lives. So all of our, you know, from our work to our relationship with our parents, with our friends, with each other, and the relationship with ourselves, first and foremost, it is so much better because we put the time into it, and that building of self-awareness every day, it makes a world of a difference.
What do you think, Diego, is one thing that most people misunderstand about meditation, especially in a world today where there's so many different voices, you know, talking about like meditation in different ways and in different aspects?
There's one main thing. I mean, there's a lot of different types of meditation. That's one thing I want to say before I say this. So, and different types of meditations will have different goals. But there's one general misunderstanding, is that when you sit down, you're just trying to make your mind quiet. And that's not really true for most of them, right? Where when you sit down, often what you're doing is trying to observe. And sometimes that may mean that your mind is loud in the background, but even if your mind isn't perfectly quiet, you can still build the quality of awareness. You can still build the quality of equanimity, meaning balance of mind. You can still build the quality of, you know, loving kindness, you know, love for yourself and for all beings. So you don't need the mind to be perfectly quiet for you to make life-changing progress.
And is there one thing that you wish, you know, you could encourage people to start on this meditation journey?
One thing that I wish, I think whether it's meditating or not, I feel like there is a tool out there for you, right? Like whether you've experienced serious trauma or not, you have definitely experienced hard times, you know, whether it's heartbreak, whether it's, you know, sadness, anxiety, you know, there are so many emotions that we've felt throughout our lives and we don't realize how they make an imprint on the mind, right? And then that imprint conditions the mind in a particular way, makes you see reality in a particular way, makes you react in a particular way. So taking the time to intentionally cultivate yourself. And I'm not talking about just habit building, but I'm talking about building self-awareness, reflecting. And you can do that through different forms of therapy. You can do that through different forms of meditation, because the type of meditation that I do is a pretty serious one. It's on the harder side of things, but there are easier forms of meditation as well. So I think this is a beautiful time that we live in on our planet, where there are so many techniques. There's Eastern modalities, Western modalities, indigenous modalities. So us as individuals, we have to do our research and find, you know, what works for me, like what connects with my intuition, like what is challenging but not overwhelming. Because, you know, even for me, like I have family members that meditation is not it doesn't work for them. It's not the right thing, but they you know, use different forms of therapy that have worked for them really well. So I think as an individual, there is something out there for you, and your job is to go find it so that you can at least take a few steps forward.
Yeah. And, you know, switching gears a little bit, you know, through your works, change is a constant theme.
Yeah.
You often encourage, you know, all of us to embrace change, let go of attachments, cultivate adaptability in the face of, you know, the changing world. And of course, you know, the different shifts that we experience in our lives. How can we learn to embrace change and navigate life's transitions with resilience and grace?
You know, I think it takes a lot of intentional reframing of our relationship with change. We have a combative relationship with change. We're literally fighting change.
Yeah. And it's just a natural human instinct, right? To resist change.
Right. It's a survival instinct. We want safety. We want things to stay the same. And the reality is that that's never going to happen. Things are changing on every single level. You know, atomic level, the mental level, the physical level, like on every level conceivable, change is happening. We need to figure out how to embrace and flow with this river of change that is always moving forward. We're afraid of losing things because of change, but we don't realize that we have gained things because of change, right?
Wow.
The opportunity for you and I to be having this conversation right now would never have been possible if the universe were static, right? If nothing were moving, like, then there would be no you, there would be no me, there would, you know, you would never have your family, your friends, or all these experiences that are helping you develop and cultivate. You know, there's a gratitude aspect. It's like, wow, like I get this opportunity to live. And there's also this encouragement for presence, right? Because everything is going to change, these moments that I have with the people I love are so much sweeter, right? When I interact with my mother or my father, like, I know that this, you know, familial unit that we have is not always going to stay like that forever. So when I'm next to you, when I'm speaking to you on the phone, let me bring as much of my attention to you as possible to really be able to just be there. Change has really, really inspired that. So don't focus so much on what it's going to take away. Focus so much on this opportunity that you're given by this universal function of change.
In the work that you do also, you encourage a lot of inner growth, right? But sometimes balancing inner growth and, you know, the demands of the world, the external demands can be really challenging. How do you, Diego, manage to maintain your inner journey while navigating through the practical aspects of life?
I really believe like slow and steady wins the race, even though there's no race. Slow and steady is everything. I've had times when I was first beginning my journey where I was like, I want to start meditating 2 hours a day. I want to change my diet completely.
Yeah.
I want to get friends. I want to change, you know, everything about my life. And it's way too much. It's completely overwhelming and none of it gets done.
Yeah.
So what I've learned from these experiences, like each year, pick one or two big things, like one or two big things and staple them down, you know, build that determination around them so that they become like second nature to you.
Yeah.
And I remember doing that for a while where it was like first big year, like no drugs that can harm your life. The year after that was like, let me start exploring meditation. And after that, it was like, okay, let me try to actually meditate every day. And then after that, it was like, you know what? Let me try to really cultivate this whole, writing thing of Young Pueblo and try to put a book together. So focus on like one or two big things. And I think that's really, really helped me because it's made everything more doable.
Wow, and it sounds also that we need a healthy dose of self-compassion. How do you, Diego, also practice or at least have some actionable steps for us that we can take away with that, to practice self-compassion with obviously ourselves in this journey? Because, like you said, we can be so hard on ourselves, we can set very unattainable goals for ourselves.
Right.
And we are always the first to maybe beat ourselves up, criticize or judge ourselves. So how would you encourage us on this journey of self-compassion?
One of the best things that we can do for self-compassion and even for your own personal mental health is that you have to move at your own speed. Don't worry about adopting the speed of another person, or if you're thinking about your relationship and then you want your relationship to be like your friend's relationship. Don't do that. Everybody has their own journey. Everybody has their own, idea of what a real goal is. I think for some people, the goal is to like make it to, another day or next year because they've had such hard lives. Or their goal is simply to heal themselves, right? They're not thinking about, I want to do this big thing for the world or this, they're just, trying to take these small steps. And I find it really beautiful because some of the most powerful people I know, they just move at their own speed, even if that's very slow or if that's fast. I think that's one of the best ways to enact your own compassion and bring it into life. You just don't want to get taken away by what everyone else is doing.
What do you think is the hopefully the ideal mental state that we should go and grow through life with?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's a state of equanimity. Equanimity really means that your mind is balanced, right? It's not having any craving. It's not having any aversion. It's being able to observe things as they are. And that's a beautiful state to live in because it doesn't mean that you're like cold or frigid or you don't care. It means that there's actually the more opportunity for love to have a compassionate mind alongside that equanimity.
And that's why you also talk so much about letting go and letting go of attachments that have a foothold in our lives. Diego, sometimes in this journey of personal growth, it involves a lot of learning and unlearning of old
Oh
beliefs.
yeah,
And
huge. Yep.
can you share with us an example of two of perhaps an old belief that you've had to unlearn and how it transformed you?
Oh, I think one of the biggest beliefs that I had to unlearn was that your first reaction is the real you. So like the first thing that pops up into my mind, that's really who I am. Because oftentimes my first reaction is just like, it's not even worth mentioning, right? It's like,
It's
oh,
like
like
it's like neuroplasticity, right? Sometimes
yeah.
it's just a natural
Yeah.
instinctual and we need time to really
Oh
rewire the
yeah.
brain to respond in a different way.
Normally the first thing that comes up is the survival mechanism, right? Or it's something defensive or hierarchical, and it's like, oof, that's rough. Oftentimes, right, you may see the success of another person and jealousy may arise, maybe the first thing, right? Jealousy. But then you think to yourself, you're like, yeah, I don't need to be jealous. You're like, wow, actually, I'm really proud of them. That's really great what they've accomplished. And I'm going to congratulate them. And it's a genuine congratulations. And that's the real you. Realizing that has helped me not be so hard on myself is like, oh, the rough thing that comes up first, you calmly let it go. And then you ponder and you're like, oh, right, this is how I actually want to feel and how I actually want to interact with the world.
I love that, Diego, because it's such a reminder that we have a choice as to how we ultimately want to respond. And I think in my journey also, it's reminding myself, when something happens and I get triggered and I realize that, I'm feeling negative emotions about a certain person, situation, or event. And I think it's always reminding myself that I have a choice to either be bitter or better. And I think that's something that you.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think that's something that also, you through your works have really, helped me so much with that self-awareness and recognizing that truly, I think we really are not our first reactions. And
Yes.
ultimately, what matters is how we choose to respond. And what do you think perhaps is one of the most important skill that human beings should develop?
If we want a better world for us and everyone around us, I think one of the things that's missing, right? Literally the missing piece, is self-love. I think that if you're, and I'm talking about self-love, not in a materialistic self-love, I'm talking about the self-love that makes the best version of you come forward, right? The self-love that's full of self-acceptance, where you're accepting your emotional history, you're not fighting yourself anymore. The type of self-love that makes you assess where you need to grow, right? Self-love is doing the hard work. It's this energy that helps you see what characteristics do I have and which ones do I need to develop. So I really believe that if more people increase their self-love, there will be less harm in the world. Because if your self-love is growing, you're not going to be interested in harming other people.
And is there perhaps, one habit or one ritual that all of us can start to practice to increase our self-love?
I think that's like a really compassionate self-analysis, right? Because you're not trying to beat yourself up, you're not trying to be rough on yourself. But I think being honest about, like, you can name, these are two things that I'm good at, and these are two things that I can get better at. And being honest with yourself, like, I think, when I first started my journey, I realized, I have determination. I know that I can do hard things, but I need to be more gentle with the people around me. I need to be, nicer with my words, nicer with my actions. These were things that were missing, and I'm still working on that. Being honest about, like, what can you cultivate that will benefit you and the people around you?
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it takes a lot of self-awareness, self-acceptance, and then,
Yeah.
to embrace all the change and cultivation that's needed, to make us more whole. Diego, also, I'm so excited that you have an upcoming new book. The way forward. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
The way forward is me going back to my roots, right? It's short forms of poetry, short prose. It's a type of book that you can open to any page and you can get some type of self-reflection, ideally in the morning or in the evening. You can read the book the whole way through, but it's meant for you to be able to flip through it and just get something that helps you reflect. And the way forward, it culminates the trilogy that started with Inward and continued with Clarity and Connection, because those two books belong together, and the way forward is like the end of the trilogy where all three of them come together. And Inward was a book about, really just you and yourself, about
Yes, I
personal
love
growth.
it.
Nice. And Clarity and Connection continued that aspect of personal growth, but it also talked a lot about relationships.
And also, Diego, is there a particular quote or saying, whether is it, by yourself or someone else, that really is like a guiding light for you, especially in times where you feel down and out or, in times of darkness?
Jiddu Krishnamurti has this quote that I find so inspiring. He said, "A change in one is a change in millions." And I think about that pretty often. Like, it's a quote that I don't have like tons of quotes in my head that I remember from other people. We're all affecting each other.
It's
So,
like a chain effect.
it's a chain. It's like a chain effect, or like a rising tide lifts all boats.
Amazing.
And I just so I'm inspired by other people who are growing.
Thank you so much, Diego. And truly, a change in one, like yourself, your life, your journey has really inspired change. There's so much change in the rest of us. I think even all the way here in Singapore, in Asia, we have been so impacted by your works, your journeys, your words as well.
Thank
And
you.
thank you so much for, staying true to that still small voice inside of you to pursue this journey, and to continue to, seek betterment, growth, and involvement so that all of us can also learn from your journey. For those of us, who want to follow more of you and your works, where can we find you online?
Yes, I think my newest favorite place is Substack. I'm loving writing longer form. So that's youngpueblo.substack.com, spelled YUNGPUEBLO.substack.com. Also on my Instagram, I'm always sharing on there too, which is young_pueblo. And those are the main two areas, but and that and my books that I've released.
Amazing. And before we end, is there a last word of encouragement that you have for, the rest of us who perhaps are just especially, embarking on this journey of personal development, personal growth, and self-awareness?
I think the biggest thing that I can say is just boldly take small steps forward, right? Don't worry about a giant leap. Don't let, like, the, because sometimes, like, the capitalism will try to just, you'll want everything faster, quicker, bigger. And that's not how personal growth works, right? You want to take these small, tangible steps forward, and you'll notice that over time it becomes a huge mountain. So just, you know, peacefully walk forward.
Yeah, and it all compounds.
Oh,
yeah. Thank you so much, Diego. It's been such a joy and honor speaking to you. Yeah, I really enjoyed this tremendously.
Yeah, thank you, Rach. This has been awesome. Thank you.